Let's call this meeting, first meeting of the House Fisheries Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is now 5:03 p.m. on Thursday, January 26, 2012. As a reminder to everybody, please turn off all your cell phones. The recording equipment will even pick up the vibration, so please turn them off. Present today, we have Representative Osterman, Representative Herron, Representative Pruitt, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Miller, and myself, Chairman Representative Thompson. Vice Chair Johnson is excused from today's meeting. Tonight, we'll be hearing House Bill 261, an act relating to loans for the purchase of commercial fishing entry permits and providing for an effective date. This is by Representative Bryce Edgemond, and we'll also hear House Concurrent Resolution 13 requesting the governor to designate one seat on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council to a sport fish license and one seat on the North Pacific Management Council to a subsistence user, and this is by House Special Committee on Fisheries. All right, House Bill 261 here to present is sponsor Representative Edgemond and his aide Tim Clark. On hand for the administration is Ben Brown for the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and Jim Anderson from the Division of Economic Development. And on the phone, Juanita Ayers, Director of the Division of Economic Development. They are available to answer questions should the members have any. Representative Edgemond, you and Mr. Clark, please come to the table, place yourselves on the record, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bryce Edgemond. I represent House District 37, which is the Bristol Bay Alaska Peninsula Aleutians region. The bill before you today is simple in concept. It's a bill that would seek to increase Alaskan ownership of Alaskan fisheries by essentially enabling a greater number of fishermen who don't qualify for conventional loans, either through a normal institution or through the Commercial Fisheries Agriculture Bank. But this bill would allow them, under the Section B loan portion of the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Act, and I should, Mr. Chairman, point out that in your packet you have, it might be two or three pages in, you have a page that lays out the various sections to the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan program that might make it a little easier to track the discussion. But the bill in front of you would essentially allow a fairly small number of Alaskan fishermen, whether they reside certainly in their coastal community or they reside in South Central Alaska or perhaps, Mr. Chairman, even your hometown or where it might be, because the Alaskan fishermen come from all over the state. They don't just reside in the community that they fish out of. But it would enable those fishermen, again, who don't qualify for conventional loan, to essentially take advantage of a of a loan program through the state of Alaska's Commercial Fishing Loan Program, and also to capitalize on the interest rates today, which are at historic low rates. You know, the 30-year prime mortgage is somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.5%, 3.7%, and so forth. And so this bill would drop the loan percentage down 2 points below prime, and established by a floor of 3%, so we would in essence go down to 3% for these group of fishermen who would qualify for this loan program. Just to give you a quick example, you know, by raising the ceiling from 100,000 to 200,000, this bill also purports to do, we would incorporate in fishermen from the Southeast Saners, Prince William Drift Net Fleet, Alaska Peninsula Drift Net Fishermen, as well as you know, the many fishermen who fish in the Bristol Bay fisheries, which you know, certainly is my backyard and the largest sockeye salmon fishery in the world. I think your committee probably has had some discussions, and I anticipate we'll, or I understand we'll be having future discussions about the graying of the fleet in Alaska, how the average age of limited entry permit holders, it's getting pretty old. I think it's somewhere around 49 or 50 years old. So what we'd like to do with this bill is to, you know, to give those younger fishermen a little bit of a bump. Let them take advantage of these historically low interest rates by participating in this program. And we're not talking a great boost. You know, right now the rates are at 5.25% through the Commercial Fishing Loan Fund. If you pay your loan on time, of course, you have to hold the loan for about a 12-month period, you can actually get your interest rate down to about 4.25%. So pretty low interest rates, very attractive. But we think that we can go a step further. We can bring it all the way down to 3% without unduly impacting a loan fund that has performed quite handsomely over the years, and right now is capitalized about $81 million, and a loan fund that allows presently fishermen to make energy efficiency improvements to their vessels, primarily buying new engines, at 3% right now. So I should say, Mr. Chairman, there has been some concern expressed about this bill perhaps driving up the cost of permits or unfairly impacting other private institutions. My response would be twofold. One, to say that when you look back in a time back to 1980, most of the limited entry permits in Alaska were financed either through conventional banks or through self-financing. And the smaller percentage, 15% dating back to 1980, really were tied to this loan program we're talking about today. So we're not, number one, talking about a great amount of Alaskans that would be able to participate. But to those that it would be provided to, it would provide them a boost. I would also say that, you know, when you look at the price of limited entry permits, in terms of tracking with interest rates, you go back to the 80s and 90s, interest rates were a lot higher than they are today. But the data clearly shows that the price of, or that the activity involving the value of salmon permits tracks more the value of the prices on the grounds that the fishermen actually get paid, or, you know, the value of the fishery that particular year because of the high prices, and therefore. I would like, Mr. Chairman, to bring your attention the concern that the financing section of the Division of Economic Development pointed out in their fiscal note, and that is that our bill inadvertently would allow for the refinancing of some existing loans. Apparently it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $255 a year. The fiscal note talks to about a $4 million loss in the first 6 years if this bill were to go into effect. What I'd like to propose, Mr. Chairman, is if you and the committee sees fit, that we take care of that provision in the bill through an amendment that I think you have possession of, because that was not our intent at all to, you know, grandfather in these existing loans. We want to start anew. We want to provide an opportunity for young fishermen, for Alaskans who, for whatever reason, can't qualify for a conventional loan. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll close there and certainly be available for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Are there any questions for the representative from the committee members on House Bill 261? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your testimony, Representative. Do you have any even projected concept of how many permits we might be talking about, let's say, within the first year or the second year of this being enacted as it's written right now?
I think we'll probably get through the chair. Representative Miller, I think we'll probably get a better idea as we hear testimony from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and perhaps the financing section, what their projections are. You know, anecdotally, again, it's not going to be a large number of fishermen around the state. It'll be a smaller number than a larger number. And like some legislation that we passed a couple years ago to amend this, the same program, you really don't know what the demand is going to be until you put the program out there.
The second question, if I may follow up, sir. I didn't get to read all of the language in here yet, so I didn't see if there was any sort of, where are these folks going to come from? I recognize that it looks as if we can think that this is going to mostly help Alaskan fishermen, which is certainly something I would like to see happen, but I don't know that there's any language that speaks to that question.
Through the chair, Representative Miller, I think that's a fair point. My response would be that, again, to just sort of reemphasize that fishermen from Alaska reside in almost any of the 228 communities throughout the state. And there should be in your packet, I think we provided a list of, I'm looking at my staff, Tim Clark, did we provide a list of all these various fisheries in the packet? But there should be a list of Southeast Seine, Southeast Drift Gill Netters, both Seine and Drift out of Prince William Sound, and Cook Inlet, and Kodiak, Chignik, Laskapence, and Bristol Bay Gill Netters. So the reach is pretty extensive. It would be fishermen that fish in these fisheries. And keep in mind that permit values can fluctuate. Some years they can go up, so there may be some fishers around the state that we haven't itemized here who may qualify for this loan program in the future.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, if I heard you correctly, you were talking about Alaskan versus non-Alaskans?
Yes, that's really where we're trying to get.
Statutes involved in this particular loan program are strictly Alaskans could participate in it.
That's what I was after. Thank you. I didn't ask the question right.
Mr. Chairman, can I just follow on that point? The statute calls for fishermen to have fished for 2 years to the last 5 years, so it's pretty ironclad in terms of its residency requirements.
Thank you. Representative Heron has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hedgeman, going to that same list, is this limited to these fisheries, or is it statewide?
Through the chair, Representative Heron, these are just some examples of fisheries that would qualify, given that the permit values, you know, as of today, are between $100,000 where the loan program exists today, and if the bill passed, you know, we'd move it up to $200,000. So these fisheries, as well as maybe other fisheries down the road, would qualify.
Mr. Well, just one more. In the spirit of levity, last year there was a confirmation process for an entry commissioner, and so would a family member of the most recent resigned governor's family member be able to qualify?
To the chair, Representative.
keep a straight face.
I can give an indirect response by saying that they would have to be certainly turned down by a couple of banks and or by the Commercial Fishery Agriculture Bank, CFAB. But, seriously, this loan program, in terms of eligibility and those who could step forward to participate, you know, when you look at the tools that government has, we can offer incentives, you know, exemptions, tax credits, or we can offer favorable interest rates on existing government programs, if you will. So this program, we think, is going to reach out and help some fishermen, but not, you know, the great range of fishermen that live throughout the state.
Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Chairman. A couple questions on that. Why most of the people that would be utilizing this loan program, why would they not be able to get a loan through a commercial bank?
Well, through the chair, Representative Pruitt, let me first start out by saying that the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund was started by the state of Alaska,
right,
especially, you know, to give Alaskan fishermen a leg up. Given that the cost of getting involved with a fishery is, even back in the 80s, is quite expensive. You know, you got your boat, you got your gear, you got your permit, you've got the operating costs, insurance, fuel, groceries, you name it. So in order to allow Alaskan commercial fishermen an opportunity to compete against you know, a lot of fishermen who come from out of the state, very aggressive fishermen who fish in many fisheries around the year, this loan program was established. And I have to admit, can you repeat the second part of your point there?
Just curious why they might not be able to get the financing from a commercial bank. What would indicate, you know, of course they'd come to utilize this. I'm just curious kind of what the situation would be that where they would have to utilize this loan as opposed to a commercial loan.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I think a typical case that this bill, or typical sort of economic profile that this bill envisions, is somebody who's young, perhaps just out of high school, or maybe in their early 20s, doesn't have the economic wherewithal, loan history, certainly the credit history, to get into a loan that would see them buying a permit that may cost $150,000, maybe $200,000. So they have to go through the motions of getting turned down by the banks or getting turned down by CFAB and going to the State Division of Investments and you know, qualified for this loan program.
Okay, and follow up.
Go ahead.
And so, and there's kind of a big, I'm trying to, big picture, kind of where I'm going on this and trying to just understand. So for an individual that, actually, so let me rephrase it. So most, do they have a delinquency rate on this? I mean, are most people paying it back? How successful has it been? And will this lowering the interest rate, will it open up the opportunity for more people to be to be able to utilize this loan? And is kind of that the intent here?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the loan fund, and I expect that the folks from the department will speak in greater detail and much more. On a much more informed basis, but the loan fund itself, it's a revolving loan fund. So you pay back into it, and the fund itself pays the cost of loan proceeds as well as all the administrative costs. And the program has been very successful. In fact, the past 9 or so years, it's paid back several million in excess funds to the Department of Fish and Game. And over time, and since I've been around the legislature the last 20 or so years, the list of eligible applicants has gradually been increased because of the overall success of the portfolio. And you know, we've added community quota entities, we've added tenders, we've added you know, small loans for fishermen who get in a bind and need some low interest rate money to pay off their tax debt. We've really expanded the loan program over the years, so it's I think the short version is it's been performing quite well.
Okay.
Representative Osterman has a question.
I go back to your comment about lowering the interest rate. I didn't see that in the bill. Does this lower the interest rate? And what section of that in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I make call my lifeline here, my staff, Tim Clark, in a second. But the section, it's page 2, line 20, section 3, actually inserts language that came from a bill a couple of years ago, House Bill 20, that would allow for the floor of a 3% loan to be put actually in the statute that I think the revolving loan program has in regulation now. And Tim, could you maybe speak a little bit more clearly to that, if you would, please, through the chair?
My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgeman. And Representative Osterman, through the chair, the section of the bill detailing the lower interest rate is section 4 on page 2, line 30. And
okay, new subsection. All right, I got it. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, my apologies, I had the wrong section there.
Thank you. Oh, one other thing, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Osterman.
In everybody's packet, I also think that there's a memo from, in reference from the economic development, talking about the amount of money that has gone back into fishing game and has come out of this revolving loan. So it shows that from 2004 through 2011, there's over $10 million has gone back into the state's coffers.
Can I then ask about that? What impact could we potentially have to a fish and game? Then I mean, you're right. About $1 million. Is it? Are they going to have to cut programs if we cut back interest rates? And or will there be an impact? I guess.
Mr. Chairman, can my staff respond to that?
Mark, go right ahead.
Right. The transfers of earnings from the fund into the fish and game operating budget were stopped after fiscal year 2010. At that time, they were a little over $1.3 million a year. And in the years preceding that, were at least $1.3 million and sometimes up to $1.9 million or more. So during the 3 years that, you know, since then, those earnings remain in the revolving loan fund and continue to strengthen it. And my understanding is they will not resume those transfers because the practice was stopped following an audit, and the recommendation by Legislative Budget and Audit that it not, that it was not considered prudent practice and it not continue. So the fund arguably is stronger than ever because those transfers have been stopped.
Can I follow up on that?
Question, go right ahead.
Then to your point there, if they chose because of the audit to no longer allow the money out, I guess it's kind of back to that. Will this impact the fund? Is it stable? Was the audit, did the audit say that they shouldn't do the transfers because it wasn't stable and they wanted to shore it up? Or was there another reason? And then, again, back to the, what would the impact be of obviously having a lower interest rate on it?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, even while they were making substantial transfers into the operating budget for the Department of Fish and Game, the loan fund itself continued to make earnings great enough so that the overall capitalization continued to increase even as the transfers of earnings were taking place. So okay. I would say the financial section of the Division of Economic Development could answer that question in greater detail and accuracy than me, but my understanding is that the loan fund continues to accrue capitalization and is in better shape than ever now that those transfers have stopped, or will grow faster now that those transfers have stopped.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Osterman has a question.
I want to add a little bit to what Mr. Clark was talking about. Part of the discussion that has taken place over the last few years in Finance Committee is truth in budgeting and trying to figure out exactly where money flows from one department to the next department rather than going from one department into the general fund. And so you look at AHFC, who gives a dividend back to the state all the time. That goes into the general fund on a normal basis. And I think that the intent of when we find out, when the Finance Committee finally eventually handles this, that those dividends will go into the general fund rather than being hidden into Fish and Game's budget as to what their budget really is on general fund dollars.
Okay.
And the other thing is that, of course, this fund was started with state dollars and continues to be paying the dividend back to the state of Alaska. All of its operating costs come out of this money prior to them getting a dividend. And then also they keep money in the fund so they can continue to loan money out. So it's actually been, when you look at $10 million as in the last 10 years, it's a fairly substantial and successful operating fund that we have.
Thank you.
Are there questions from the committee members?
Mr. Chairman, I guess just one quick other point to bring your attention, the committee's attention, is that the fiscal notes do not show any additional positions being added to the financing section or the Commercial Fisheries Interest Commission. I think that's important to point out.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your testimony, and I would now like to open it up to the floor to public testimony. We have several people online, and we also have from the Division of Economic Development, Juanetta Ayers. Did you want to ask her that particular question that you had?
You know, if she can expound, because I'm guessing she's listening. If she has anything to add to maybe what Representative Osterman, I'd love to hear it. But I think we may have the answer.
Juanetta, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. Thank you. For the record, my name is Juanetta Ayers. I'm the director for the Division of Economic Development and the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And if I could beg the indulgence of having the question repeated, I do apologize. I'm at a bit of a disadvantage as I'm in the Anchorage airport on my cell phone, so I'm going to ask both that I get to stay on my cell phone and that the question be repeated.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
right,
basically the question that I had asked is we're referencing the fact that the loan had in the past been able to put money back into the Department of Fish and Game, and that was eliminated because of an audit that was done. My question was, was that because that the fund was not stable We may have these answers. I'm just repeating the way I asked it. Was that because the fund wasn't stable and they needed to shore it up? And then secondly to that was, what was the impact, what potentially could be the impact then of a decrease in the interest rate to the particular fund?
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. To the chair, first of all, I would point to the practice of doing an operating transfer to both the Department of Fish and Game, and in the past there have been transfers to the Department of Environmental Conservation. As was stated during Representative Edgeman's testimony, that practice was discontinued at the end of FY10. Largely, there are two reasons, I believe, for that, and Representative Osterman spoke to one, which was a broad directive through the legislature, and OMB offered some additional direction and advice to the departments about the proper characterization of sources of funds with regard to departmental operations. So those corrections, I believe, were all made as we went into FY11. The other reason that I would also like to point to is that within the practice of operating a revolving loan fund of this nature, it really is not seen as a lending best practice to burden the fund with any operating expenses other than the loan fund itself. So loan fund administration, the cost of the lending activity, collections, accounting, all of those things, the administration of the fund, those are seen as allowable operating expenses out of the proceeds of the fund. But it would definitely not be characterized as a best practice to burden the fund with operating expenses for activities that are not directly related to the loan fund itself. And then with regard to the impact of an interest reduction, we took into consideration a number of things. Certainly, we understand that there is a public policy objective here in terms of creating opportunities for new entrants into commercial fishing and to retaining the loss in participation in commercial fishing. And we understand and applaud that notion. But with regard to the operation of the loan fund, we certainly had to take into consideration what the impact of reduced interest rates would be, both with regard to new loan demand and with regard to existing and prospective borrowers under both sections A and B. So with regard to new loan demand, we anticipated that, of course, there would be the interest reduction based on loan demand of about $1.2 million a year. Last year, our new loans under Section B was about 20 loans. And then, as also mentioned by Representative Edgeman, there are 255 existing loans under Section B for limited entry permits. And our analysis and the fiscal note that you see before you this evening did anticipate that there would be an impact because we didn't see an exclusion that that there would be an impact on the fund by those folks refinancing at the lower interest rate. Looking at those loans with an average current interest rate of 6.5% over the portfolio of those loans, and then a reduction to 3%, we estimated some losses over the course of the life of those loans as they went forward. The other thing to take into consideration is the viability of the fund itself. The impact of this would perhaps balance out over the long term, but it is true that it, at least as we've understood the intent of the bill coming in this evening, that there would be a reduction of funds available for lending to all borrowers based on the reductions that would come from these interest rates being lowered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that last piece is actually important, that it could potentially impact, I guess, future people that want to take part in this loan might not make it available. Of course, that's just a policy decision that we've got to make. If So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions of committee members from Ms. Ayers? Thank you very much, and you're going to stay online. If you're in the airport, you must be getting ready to board a plane, I would guess.
No, I am just back home and happy to be so, but I will stay online for you.
Okay, in case there's some other questions. Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the phones. We have three people that have called in wanting to testify. We have Izetta Chambers from Dillingham. Are you online?
I am.
Get a little closer to the microphone, and please place your name and your affiliation on the record and go right ahead.
Okay. Well, my name is Izetta Chambers. I'm a resident of Dillingham. I grew up in Naknek and have been in the Bristol Bay region most of my life. I'm only representing myself, although I do work with the Marine Advisory Program at the university level when I'm not representing myself. I just wanted to point out a few things, and I'll try to keep my comments brief because I know other people are waiting to testify. The seafood industry is the number one employer in the state, and I strongly feel that we need to derive the maximum benefit should accrue to our residents here in Alaska. The average permit for drift, Bristol Bay drift permit prices this last year was over $143,000. And this House Bill 261 would help alleviate the cap on lending, and it would allow our local people to engage in permit acquisition and get involved in a serious economic engine in the Bristol Bay region in particular. I don't know a whole lot about other regions and how much permits are going for, but I would say that the 100,000 cap that's in here, I believe, is probably an antiquated number that has not been adjusted for the rising cost of the permits. Some of the problems, especially here in the Bristol Bay region, with people trying to invest in the fishery and purchase permits, is number one is the lack of collateral. If I'll just give you an example here, if somebody is living on a piece of land that is on a 99-year shareholder lease from the Native Corporation, or if they have Native allotment, those lands cannot be used as collateral. So somebody from Washington or Oregon who comes up here and fishes seasonally may have an easier time to drum up $100,000 or the difference, you know, that they need in cash to purchase a permit. So what we've seen over the course of ever since the Commercial Fisheries Limited Entry Act was enacted is we've seen a steady loss of permits here within the region. And each permit that leaves the region, that is akin to a job leave in the Bristol Bay region. And of course, the grain of the fleet is a prevailing problem in the state of Alaska. The average age of a commercial fisherman in Alaska is now 48. So we need to provide incentives for younger people to get into this type of employment, and these changes proposed in House Bill 261 would provide that. I myself have been fishing since I was 9 years old. Both my brother and my sister fish commercially in the summer seasons, and our younger people are starting to get into that, but it's only because of we've been blessed in our family with keeping those permits really close. We've been very hesitant to sell permits outside of the family. So I guess that's all. I personally would like to see this go a little bit further, but I know that there's prohibitions on not selling permits to non-Alaska residents, so I'll just keep those comments to myself. But I would like to at some point see the state of Alaska try to reach some kind of brokerage agreement that would allow those local permits to have some way to go through a local brokerage by law before they get sold to outside, but that's a whole different matter.
Thank you. Questions from the committee on from Ms. Chambers? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Big Lake. Mel Grove, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you get a little closer to the microphone? We can just barely hear you. Place your name and your... tell us about
yourself. Yeah, my name is Melvin Grove. I'm the president of the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association. I run a charter out of Valdez. And I was here today to testify on HCL 13, but happened to notice were discussing how this House Bill 261, and thought I would comment. And my comment, you know, I guess I am for but yet against this bill too, depending on how it goes. One of the things, I guess, is I know this doesn't isn't impacting or doesn't affect us commercial sport fish guides, charter operators, but assuming that this would impact or would go along with a halibut permit that currently now we have to purchase, maybe I would support this bill. But I know there's House Bill 121, I've been following that, didn't get a chance to testify on that Wednesday, but I guess I feel like a second-class citizen in some respects reading the two different bills. This bill has allows the loan applicant to get a 2% below prime rate, but yet in the bill that's out, House Bill 121, they list the interest rate on page 4 as a prime rate plus 2%, and it could not be less than 6% a year, 6% a year, and no more than 10.5% a year. I guess I feel like a second-class citizen here when there's this bill is giving somebody who wants to apply for a commercial permit a loan at no more than 3%, but if, as a charter operator, if I wanted to buy a halibut permit through the program that under House Bill 121, I couldn't do it any less than 6%. I just, it's just crazy to me. And so, you know, let's make this across the board. If you're going to apply, you feel in your heart to pass this, I guess, let's also make the interest rates apply to us commercial charter guys as well, especially us halibut charter guys. I can tell you, as an operator out of Valdez, we lost within 2 month period last year, just in June and July, the Valdez area. We lost. We were down over 300 angler days. That's 50 charters that we lost because of guys who didn't get permits. They sold their permits. We're going to lose probably 2 more charter permits, halibut permits this year, guys that sold their permits and have gone out of the area, Valdez area. And, you know, I love Valdez. My son now is going to get his captain's license. And, you know, if I could get a low-interest loan, I could put another boat together and be running 2 boats and probably employ 2 to 3 captains full-time instead of just, you know, my own charter business. It would be nice to be able to bring some of that business back into Valdez, be able to buy a permit. But, you know, I'm not going to, I guess, under this, the program that they have, 6%, when the state's giving a commercial guy a permit for 3%, I'm just totally against that. So, I guess, again, I'm for or against, just depending on how you want to, how it goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. Questions from the committee members for Mr. Grove? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Grove, for your testimony. We're going to go next to North Pole, Alaska. Mr. Ken Larson, are you online?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Ken Larson from North Pole, even though I spend an average of 8 months out of the year out of Valdez operating a small lodge and halibut charter operation, salmon and halibut charter operation, and I've been doing that since 1993. Short and sweet, mirroring what Mel has already said, I assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but since we are, as halibut charter operators are now under a limited entry program, we would qualify for what you envision under House Bill 261. Is that correct?
Can we get some answers? I couldn't hear yet. I'm getting some head shakes, yes, but go ahead with your testimony.
Do the limited entry halibut charter permit holders qualify for this loan program envisioned under House Bill 261? And I guess if it does, I support the bill. If it doesn't, I do not support the bill.
Is there someone, maybe Representative Edgman?
Juanetta, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Can you give us an answer to that question?
The answer is no.
because this is specific to limited entry permit. I don't have the statute in front of me, but I believe the answer is no. And I, if Jim Anderson is still online, perhaps he can answer that specifically. But I believe where this is located within statute is that would specifically not include a limited entry halibut.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can I
go ahead, Mr. Larson?
Continue a little bit. Either we are a limited entry permit program under the Commercial Entries Fishery Division, or we're not. If we're not, we are definitely being discriminated against in the way of halibut charter permits. I have a real problem with that. We're redheaded stepchildren again, and I feel very discriminated against. And if that is the position on the bill, I am definitely opposed to it. And a lot of us will be. We have lost, we're down to less than a dozen halibut charter operators under the limited entry program in Valdez, down from a high of over 30 2 to 3 years ago. And we are losing more. There's going to be very little fleet left in Valdez. The permits have migrated primarily to Homer, but they are gone. So the opportunity for the public is decreasing. So that's all I have, unless you've got some more questions or answers to my question. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just reading here in the book under 1610.310, commercial fishing license under AS 16.05.480, or a permit holder under a different one. Anyway, it sounds like Ms. Ayers' no question is correct. Mr. Osterman has a question for you, though.
Thank you. This is a salmon permit that we're talking about, and it's written in statute that way. If I remember correctly, though, and I think there's a bill in the Senate right now that is actually creating a halibut charter boat loan program to help exactly what you're looking for. Are you aware of that?
Is that the 121?
Yes.
House Bill 121?
I think it's a House bill.
No, I spoke to it earlier. That's got a it's a different it's a 6% to 10.5% threshold. Again, another discriminatory rate versus what this is. I did not note that this was a silver or a salmon fishery only loan program in the bill.
Well, that's because the total statute is not before you, just the changes to the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Osterman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Edgman, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in responding to the two concerns, I think that the points that they raise are valid points. And in prior discussions about amending this loan program, which we did successfully a couple of years ago for energy-efficient engines, these concerns came up, as well as concerns about sports fishermen wanting to get low interest rate loans and so forth. And personally, I've always supported that. But what we're trying to do here today is, within the constraints of a program that's been around for nearly 30 years, a commercial fishing revolving loan program, that clearly, you know, with the advent of charter boats and some other fisheries around the world, the state that don't participate in this, you know, there probably is room to consider with Senate Bill 121, as Representative Osterman indicated, taking a closer look at that. But where we're at today, and I, from experience, would caution that if we went in and sort of radically altered the purpose of the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Program, that we would get more than a can of worms open in front of us, that a better way to do it would be do it through another bill that, you know, but wants to set up a program for the gentleman that have been testifying.
Okay, we've finished with the online calls. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to come up and testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, please name your affiliation on for the record.
Thank you. My name is Julian McKean. I'm president of Cordova District Fishermen United. You have a letter in your packet from that organization. I just wanted to clear up a couple little things. One is a commercial bank cannot loan on a permit. Only CFAB and the Division of Investments are able to do that under the statutes. When the limit entry was created, it made sure that corporations and everything couldn't hold permits. And the theory behind that was, you know, a fisherman gets in need, goes to a bank, gets a lien on his permit, loses his permit, and then goes out in the free market. So they protected permits and tried to keep those in those communities by just making... CFAB came after the Division Investments. So, but those are the only two entities that can loan on a permit. A commercial bank cannot hold a permit as collateral. So you can't go to your bank, Wells Fargo, and get a loan with your permit. So that's why these two programs, CFAB and the Division Investments, are so important. And as the sponsor pointed out, I just now have my son get into the fishery last year. I gave him my other boat. And now we're trying to figure out how we're going to finance a $170,000 permit, which I just looked at. Guys are asking now, they want $200,000 for their Copper River permit. So some folks are going to the canneries and then they have to mortgage their house or their boat to leverage money to come up with the extra money beyond the $100,000 that the Division Investments has available. And permits are driven by the price on the grounds and the seasons. Two good seasons back in Prince William Sound has driven the price up. Prices in Bristol Bay is coming up, so you see the correlation with permit prices in the price on the grounds and availability of the season. Some places like in Kodiak, the same fishery is struggling with some of the red systems over there. They're trying to figure out how to get the fishery back online again and rebuild some of those fisheries. Those permits haven't moved too much. But this permit also, loan program, would be available to anybody, whether that permit's $50,000 or $200,000. But what we're trying to do here, Mr. Chairman, is raise that limit to tune to what is going on nowadays, which I think there's six or seven permits over $100,000 and a couple approaching that particular figure.
All right. Members have any questions of Jerry? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else like to testify? Benjamin Brown, did you want to say anything, or are you just here to answer questions?
I'm going to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. Well, seeing no more public testimony, public testimony is now closed. I have the amendment that their sponsor had spoken about that unintendedly had not made it to where that refinance would not be available for this because it would be a rush of people in to try to refinance. So I would move that Amendment A1 be the one that we take before us.
Second.
Any objections? Seeing none, then we'll be addressing the House Bill 261 version A1 or amendment with Amendment A1. Mr. Representative Edgman, did you have any final comments you'd like to make on House Bill 261 as amended now?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to I appreciate the prompt hearing of the bill. Obviously, you've heard this issue, although it's sort of simple in concept in terms of changing the program, does bring in a lot of other issues. I think they're very valid issues. And with that, just want to thank the committee for its attention and certainly all the discussion tonight.
Thank you. Committee discussion on House Bill 261 with the amendment. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to, there's a letter of opposition that was presented by CFAB, which is the Commercial Fisheries Agricultural Bank, and I want to discuss that just a little bit because I don't agree with a lot of the discussion within that letter. And the way it was written, it kind of was, the main thing was that they wanted to see two banks plus CFAB turning down the loans. And I think that's basically what it already is set up. And so I couldn't quite figure out why she was objecting that way. And I also want to comment that CFAB was also a state-funded bank. And the state of Alaska put the money up initially to start CFAB. If I remember correctly, and I can't say this definitively, but I think that CFAB has then paid back all of that money to the state of Alaska, and now they're basically on their own as a bank. But they're still a state bank, if I understand correctly. There's also a bill that's traveling around the legislature right now for them to remove the clause that they can loan to people outside of the bank or outside of the state instead of just Alaskans. So it's kind of, and I'm trying to figure out exactly where CFAB is going with all of this. If they're opposed to this, yet they want to change their statute so they can loan to people outside the bank, even though it's a state-funded bank it started with. So, and I think the initial idea behind both CFAB and the Division of Investment, this loan portfolio, was to help Alaskans. And that's what I think we want to go for and continue to go for. With that, I'll shut my mouth.
Further discussion by the committee members? Representative Pruitt.
I appreciate giving Alaskans an opportunity and giving them an opportunity through a loan. I think, you know, kind of what we have to, what we'll have to determine is obviously are we comfortable with going from $100,000 loans to $300,000 loans? What stress might that put on, or what would that prevent as many people as being able to utilize the loan just because some of the capital would be expended? But I think that I completely agree with Representative Edgman that this is the keeping this just to the commercial entry, not expanding it beyond is exactly will muddy the waters. But I do think that we have some really valid points brought up that if we're going to offer certain interest rates to some groups, how does that impact other groups, and are we doing the right thing for everyone? So I'm not in any way going to object to the bill, but I just think those are some things that we really need to consider as we move with this and other pieces of legislation that are before us right now. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Seeing none, can I have a motion to move House Bill 261 from committee? Be that one.
Mr. Chairman, I would move HB 261 version 27 LS0968/A as amended.
A1
from committee as amended with individual recommendations to test fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Without objection, House Bill 261 moves from House Special Committee on Fisheries and on to its next committee referral. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the bill and and get ready for our next House Concurrent Resolution 13 presentation. Thank you, Representative Ed. 6:02 p.m. Our next order of business tonight is House Concurrent Resolution 13, requesting the governor to designate one seat on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council for a sport fish licensee and one seat on the North Pacific Management Council for a subsistence user. This is a bill by or resolution by the House Special Committee on Fisheries. Here to present the resolution is my Fisheries Committee aide, Jane Pearson. Jane, would you go ahead and place your name on the record? And
for the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. And House Concurrent Resolution calls for a sports fisherman and a subsistence fisherman names to be put up by the governor for the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is one of 8 regional councils established by the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act to oversee management of the nation's fisheries. The North Pacific Management Council has jurisdiction over 1 million square miles, exclusive economic zone off Alaska. NPFMC manages federal fisheries in Alaska valued over $1 billion annually. with primary responsibility for groundfish management in the Gulf of Alaska, Bering Sea, Aleutian Islands, including cod, pollock, flatfish, mackerel, sablefish, and rockfish species. The council has 11 voting members and 4 non-voting members. The 11 voting members include the Commissioner of Department of Fish and Game, Director of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the Alaska Regional Administrator of NOAA Fisheries. There are 5 public members appointed by the Governor of Alaska and 2 public members appointed by the Secretary from the State of Washington. One thing of interest is the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is the only council that does not have membership that is predetermined. So the other councils all have sports fish or native fishermen on their councils, as does the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. Since it is estimated that 90% of rural households consume fish caught for subsistence, sports fishing contributes to over $123 million annually. Their voices are vital for the sustainability of the resource and should be represented at the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. Both sports fish licensees and Alaska subsistence users who had participated in the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council meetings have commonly expressed frustration with the lack of opportunity to meaningfully participate in the process and a lack of representation on the council. However, allocation of fish and waters managed by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council directly affects the quality of fish available for harvest by sports fishermen and subsistence fish users. HC 13 requests that the governor designate both a sports fish licensee and a subsistence user for a seat on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. In a state that is home to 3,000 rivers, 3 million lakes, and 6,640 miles of coastline, protecting opportunities for sports fishers and subsistence users is a vital responsibility. And that's
thank you, Ms. Pearson. Is there any questions from the committee? None? Okay, seeing no questions, I would like to open this up to public testimony. We have looks like several pages of call-ins. Okay. Okay, I'll start at the top of the list. Teresa Weiser from Sitka. Are you online?
Yes, good evening. My name is Teresa Weiser. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on HCR 13. I am president of the Sitka Tribal Operators Association here in Sitka, and I would just like to speak in support of this resolution. I think it's a good move and would help us to have our council be more aligned with other councils in terms of representation of the people who use the resources. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to comment.
Any questions from the council members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Weiser. I'm going to go through these pretty rapidly because we have quite a list of them. Heath Hilliard is next out of Anchorage. Are you online, Heath?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead and
can you hear me?
Your name and affiliation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Heath Hilliard. I'm the Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, and I'm calling in to testify in support of this bill, but I'd like to qualify my testimony just a little bit, qualifying that I haven't had a chance to vet this particular resolution through my board, so my comments are going to be of general nature in support of the concept. As Ms. Weiser pointed out, and as your aide, Ms. Pearson, pointed out, the North Council is not consistent with the other councils under the Magnuson-Stevens Act with regard to membership. But more important than, perhaps as important or more important than the issue of parity for the user groups is the issue of domain knowledge and understanding of business models. one of the things in my experience thus far dealing with the North Council is that a number of council members and some of the staff don't generally understand the unique dynamics of charter fishing business models, particularly in Southeast Alaska. And so I think in addition to just providing some degree of parity, changing, you know, stipulating membership to include sport fishermen would also provide the council understanding and developing management measures that preserve both the conservation of species, but also do so with least economic harm. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks, and just so that I'm generally in support of the concept, and I believe that my membership is as well.
Questions from the members? Thank you very much, Mr. Hilliard. Next, we're going to go to Mel Grove from Big Lake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Melvin Grove, President of the Pennsylvania Sound Charter Boat Association, and I would like to urge the committee to pass HCR 13 and even possibly attach it to Senate Bill 24 and make this a requirement with the government sport fishing a subsistence user to the North Pacific Marine Fisheries Council. Why? Because when you allow the fox in the hen house, you soon lose all your eggs, egg production, and quickly run out of hens. And this probably sounds familiar. If you haven't noticed the latest reports, one of our greatest state resources is suffering from dramatic decline. Irrespective of overestimates of halibut abundance allowed the commercial sector to overharvest the public resource, we're now seeing a dramatic decline in the average size and harvestable biomass. I believe this has occurred for the same reason you lose hens and eggs. The fox has been eating well while the farmer's family goes hungry. It's time for the state to put a lock on the hen house door and select more people on the council to act as watchdogs. So I urge you to please pass this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. Any questions?
Could you just ask him to repeat the first part of his statement?
The first part, you cut out about three times on us, so that very first part of your testimony.
I urge you to pass this resolution and even possibly attach it to Senate Bill 24 and make it not just a resolution but a requirement that the state, that the governor pick a sport fishing representative and a subsistence user to the North Council.
Okay, Mr. Grove. Thank you very, very much. Next we have Donna Bondioli from Homer.
Yes, this is Donna Bondioli, Captain B's Alaskan Seas Adventures, but I'm speaking on behalf of the sport fish licensees who fish on our boat. I've been participating in the North Council meeting since 2000, and throughout the years I have been appalled at the lack of balance of fishing sectors on the council. At one point, I even wrote the other seven councils to find out what the makeup was of their council, and almost all of them do have a 50-50 split between commercial and sport entities, with the exception, I think, of one who even has more sport fish than commercial, and none of them are as off balance as ours. And as you mentioned, the intent of the Magnuson-Stevens Act is to have representation for all. For years, we've been asking for more sport fish appointees. And this summer, when Senator Begich was in Homer, he said he would love to endorse and promote more candidates for a balanced council, but he has to choose a candidate from those names that are submitted from the governor. So I wholeheartedly endorse asking the governor to appoint both a sport fish licensee and a subsistence representative for the North Council. Thank you.
Questions of Ms. Bondioli?
Bondioli?
Excuse me, I kind of slaughtered your name there.
That's okay.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask all of the people that are online if they could also fax or email to my office their written testimony of what they had to say. I'd be appreciated so we can include that in the record. We had a hard time picking up a couple of the phone calls, so we want to make sure we get them accurate in the record. Okay, next we have Wade Ryan out of Unicolite. Wade, are you on the line?
Actually, Wade's not going to testify. He's here to listen in.
Okay, thank you. We'll move down the list then. Art Ivanoff out of Unicolete.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Art Ivanoff. I'm the chairman of the Southern Norton Sound Fish and Game Advisory Committee. We represent the villages of Shackleton, St. Michael, Stebbins, and, of course, Unicolete. We support resolution HCO 13 with one friendly amendment. We'd like to see language referring to tribal governments in this process. We think there's a real need to advocate for inclusion in the process, increased representation, inclusion of NGOs and tribal governments. We think this is just the tip of the iceberg as it relates to representation. There's an incredible report by Josh Eagle, which was published in 2003, called Taking Stock of Regional Councils, which identified some problematic areas of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And with that, Mr. Chair, that concludes my testimony.
All right. Questions to Mr. Ivanoff? Seeing none, Mr. Ivanoff, thank you very much for your testimony. Moving down the list, I'll go next to Ken Larson in North Pole. Ken, are you still on the line?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Fisheries Committee for letting me testify on HCR 13. I'm Ken Larson from North Pole, Alaska, representing myself, and I own and operate a small, large, and halibut and salmon charter business out of Valdez and Hellamar about 8 months out of the year since at least 1993. I strongly support HCR 13, but I would suggest you amend the language to clarify that the appointees be Alaska residents with no ties to the commercial fishing industry. However, since this is a House concurrent resolution and non-binding, I am very concerned that it will have little effect on our governor, as he, as well as previous governors, have long chosen to disregard the sport fish and subsistence public's NOAA and Department of Commerce's request for more equitable non-com fish representation on North Council. I would rather see this type of language be included in a bill like House Bill 20 or Senate Bill 24 that will result in a regulation or statutory requirement. This will certainly help the sport and subsistence users get a better shake in these fisheries. As a result, any help that you could offer in achieving more equitable representation on the governing boards will be appreciated. Thank you for this opportunity.
Questions, Mr. Larson? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Larson. Next, we're going to Bob Denny in Soldotna. Bob?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think it's Bob Penny. My name is Bob Penny from Soldotna, representing myself. I'm speaking to you today. I was the first member of the public put on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council by Governor Knowles. And before that, it was mostly composed of just industry people. It was very revealing, very interesting. I learned a lot, and the most important thing I've learned there, and I've been a resident of the state for 60 years, is this is a critical item that the council should have a representative from the public. In retrospect, it's almost like a relief on a tea kettle. You have somebody on the council that the public can go to. It takes away a lot of the anguish and upset that happens to the public. There's 220,000 licensed anglers in Cook Inlet. I would say a majority of those, by far, fish for halibut. And halibut is controlled from the shore to the 200-mile limit by the federal government and by the North Pacific Fisheries Council management. And this last one, Ms. Mondioli just talked on, brought that out very clearly in Homer. So it's important that the public have somebody on the council they can go to. And as has been noted to you, and my senior memory recalls, every other council has representation on from sport fisheries on the council, as does the Magnuson-Stevens Act. All refer to representations for the public. So I really think this is a long ways overdue. It is very important that it be carried forward. I think you're doing a wonderful job looking at this. Ed Rasmussen followed me on the council. After that, Ed Dersham did. And I talked to Ed today. He had a suggestion that where it says your subsistence member, might also be modified, and you may wish to discuss this, as a member of the CDQs, who would be probably with a native establishment too, but having it a subsistence and maybe a member of the CDQs who are growing in stature and economic activities in the fisheries would be very, very important. Mr. Chairman, I endorse everything you're trying to do, and I hope you carry forward and pass this resolution.
Questions of Mr. Penny. Mr. Osterman has a question, Mr. Penny.
Hello, Bob.
Mr. Osterman.
Hey, I'm trying to remember how many people have been appointed to the council that actually had the sport fish background like you did. Ben Ellis is another one that jumps to my mind, and then you mentioned Ed Dersham. Were there other members that you can think of?
Yes, through the chair. Representative Osterman, I was the first. Ed Rasmussen followed in my shoes. Ben Ellis was put up but not confirmed, and then Ed Dersham came afterwards. So I started off with Governor Knowles, and that seat has gone to a public person since then. And I really think it's important to the public. They have somebody to go to talk to when something affects a major fishery in the state for the public. So I think it's important that that's exact thing continue.
I thank you, Bob.
Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Penny. Next, we're going to go to Karen Gills from Anchorage. Oh, she's in Anchorage. Karen, go ahead and place yourself on the record and give us your affiliation.
Good evening. My name is Karen Gillis. I'm the Executive Director at Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. I am testifying you tonight in support of H.R. 13. I do agree with some of the prior testimony that you've heard already, so I don't want to be too redundant. However, what we do know is subsistence fishing provides a large share of the food consumed in rural Alaska. These stocks are affected by the decisions made by the council members, and there is a clear and obvious lack of representation on the council. This is a very good step towards what needs to happen. However, as Mr. Larson mentioned, this is a non-binding resolution, and what we would prefer is to see something move forward that is put into statute. Section 302 of the Magnuson-Stevens Act identifies for the Pacific Fishery Management Council that a tribal seat be required. The language says, including one appointed from an Indian tribe with federally recognized fishing rights. The Pacific Council consists of the states of California, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. I would argue that those states have no more or less Indian tribal authority than Alaska, and for that council to specify a tribal seat and our North Pacific Fisheries Management Council not specifying does create a discrepancy that I think the state of Alaska should work very hard to correct. That is the extent of my comments tonight.
Yeah, Ms. Gillis, Representative Herron has a question.
Hello, Karen. This is Bob Herron. You know, in the legislation proposed by the chair is that there would be a seat for a subsistence user, and later in the meeting I'm going to offer up an amendment that we change it to insert this phrase, an individual nominated by an Alaska Native organization that represents rural subsistence users. Do you have a comment on that?
I think in relation to how the Magnuson-Stevens Act is written, that specifically addresses Indian tribal it doesn't quite measure up. However, I think you're getting closer.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions of Ms. Gillis? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Ricky Geese in Kenai.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go right ahead and put yourself on the record.
Yes. Hi. My name is Ricky Geese. I'm the Executive Director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association in Soldotna. Thank you for allowing the public to testify on this issue. I'm going to present just some of my own personal observations of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council since 2004 as I've been executive director here. I participated in the Halibut Charter Stakeholder Committee process, which came up with the Halibut Moratorium Permit Program. And I'd just like to also participated in 2010 at the first recreational summit for sport fishing interests presented by NOAA. That was a nationwide conference, and three of the things that came out of the sport fishing conference by NOAA was that it was important for the sport fishing interest to have the MRIP, which is the Marine Recreation Information Program, completed, which gets an accurate tally of harvest and effort data. However, two of the main issues that came out of that conference were was having balanced representation on councils, but more importantly than that was having a sound basis of economic data where that to understand the allocation issues so that the councils had the information to actually maximize the value from the resources that they were deliberating about. There is a lack of economic data on the sport fishing side, and also on the subsistence side. On the commercial side, you have obviously excessive values, but when you get down into allocation decisions, which is one of the primary decisions of the council members, there really is a lack of economic data and harvest and data and impact data on subsistence users that the council oversees. So while I support the resolution here, I think in essence we do have a de facto public seat, as Mr. Penny had said. I think it's important to also get subsistence voices on the council, and in that regard, the voice which council decision impacts subsistence resources in two areas. One is halibut, and the second is salmon. And typically, salmon issues are influenced on the Yukon River. So when I've been at council meetings, I've seen that there's definitely a divide within the Alaska Native community on council decisions. You have CDQ groups, which are getting vested and becoming very economically productive in Western Alaska. However, that same productivity impacts the salmon bycatch issues, which is affecting upriver users on the Yukon River. So you have a dynamic tension there at council meetings, and I think the voice that's disenchanted is the upriver subsistence users. They do not seem to have a real strong voice within the council process at this time. The halibut issues, in terms of the public, I think Mr. Dershowitz in his public seat has been a real plus person to go to talk about halibut issues. So I do think it's very important to have a person who understands the sport fishing industry on the council process. Obviously, the North Council oversees the largest seafood industry productivity in North America. Alaska is over 50% of all of seafood production in North America. So obviously, you're going to want to have the de facto industry seats from commercial fishing on that council. However, I don't think it's too much asked to say that the voices of the sport fishing industry and the subsistence users have a place on that council also. And I think at the end of the day, having those voices in the council process makes for better decisions on the council as they figure out how to allocate those resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Geese. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Geese. Next, we're going to Greg Sutter in Homer.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, Greg Sutter, representing the Alaska Charter Association. I'm the president of the Alaska Charter Association. We do support H.R. 13. It's very consistent in our message that we've been trying to deliver to the state and also to federal delegates. And we do need balanced representation on the council, and this is one way to ensure that. And I would like to just say that I in expediency's sake, Mayor Ricky Geese's sentiments, and that is, too, to add on to that, is that it's a very important resource that we deal with our renewable resources in the state, and that is the future of Alaska. So we do need balanced representation on the North Council, and this is one way to help with that process. So thank you very much.
Okay, any questions of Mr. Sutter from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Sutter. And now we're moving on to John Sky Starkey from Anchorage. Mr. Starkey, if you'd put yourself on the record and give us your affiliation, I'd sure appreciate it, and we'll listen to your testimony. Mr. Starkey, are you there?
Hello, and thank you. My name is John.
Can you get a little bit closer to the microphone, please?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead now.
Okay, thank you. Yes, my name is John Sky Starkey. I'm here today representing the Association of Village Council Presidents, a tribal consortium located in Bethel, representing 56 villages. And I'm here to speak in support of the resolution. I want to echo the comments of Ms. Gillis and Mr. Ivanoff and urge the committee to amend the aspect of the bill that only speaks of a subsistence user for several reasons. First, the language currently in the proposed resolution would really not mean very much, since under Alaska law, every Alaska resident is an eligible subsistence user. So, in fact, every Alaska resident who has ever served on the council would have satisfied that criteria. It really adds nothing. Secondly, there are federally recognized tribes in Alaska. The Alaska Supreme Court has confirmed that in several recent decisions, and that these tribal governments do have some jurisdiction over their members. This is a federal management body. These are federally recognized tribal governments. The Magnuson Act already includes recognition that the federally recognized tribes in the Pacific Council are entitled to a seat, and it makes sense that be followed in this case as well. There are certain federally recognized rights for harvesting marine mammals and other resources that are covered by the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and which the North Pacific Fishery Management Council has some input over, that affect these rights that are guaranteed to these tribal members. So I urge you to make that change and to bring it in consistent with the Pacific Council and other federally recognized management bodies. Thank you very much. That will conclude my comments.
Okay, Mr. Starkey, Representative Perrin has a question for you.
Good to hear you, John. And I guess that the amendment that I'll propose later in the meeting, there may be some critics out there, but what I've heard in past meetings, the chairman held meetings last year on the council, and some of the questions that I offered up was, why isn't there a subsistence seat? And the comments at that time was, well, we do have members who are the chairman lives in Dillingham, and two other council members are sympathetic to the subsistence viewpoint, but their seats have a singular purpose and efficiency to whatever that seat may be. Do you believe that the subsistence and sports fishermen should have a seat so they have that same singularity of purpose and efficiency as representing their seat?
Well,
Well, thank you, Representative Heron. I think you bring out a very good point. Regardless of how a person may feel and support subsistence or sport, I think it's very difficult to wear two hats at the same time. And so if you're primarily engaged in representing an industry interest, it becomes a difficult proposition to really fully advocate for the other. And in saying that, I want to acknowledge that I think Chairman Olson has done a remarkable job in creating the balance, a balance there. But that certainly is not always the case. And there are certainly instances where you need your representative on the council representing your interests to be able to be a go-to person so you can have input through the council so you're fully informed as to what's going on and so that you have an advocate there and a vote, I may add. So I think your observations are right on the mark.
Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up, Representative Heron?
Just a closing comment from myself is that what I heard last year is, well, that people that have a seat on council are sympathetic to subsistence and sports fishermen, and so they're quote-unquote protected. But I think in my opinion, if there was a subsistence seat and a sports fish seat, then in turn those seats would also be sympathetic to the commercial fishing side as well.
Any further questions? Representative Osterman has
no
question. Oh. He does not. Any further questions of Mr. Starkey? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Starkey, for your testimony. All right. Is there anybody else online or in the audience that would like to testify on HCR 13? Seeing none, that brings House Concurrent Resolution 13 back before the committee. Are there any? Is there any further discussion, questions, or amendments from committee members? Representative Heron.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Amendment A.3.
Second.
Okay. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we'll be addressing HCR 13 with Amendment A.3. Further discussion by committee members. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a. I second this for sake of discussion, and I do have a problem with the first part of the amendment where it deletes the subsistence user and inserts an individual nominated by the Alaskan Native organization that represents rural subsistence users. And I think there should be a subsistence user on there. And I think that we should encourage the governor to continue to make that appointment like has been made in the past. But I have a problem. I'm 68-year resident of Alaska, and I'm a subsistence user. And if I read this correctly, it pretty much takes me out of the picture unless I go to the Alaska Native organization that represents and lobby them to appoint me or put my name forward. I understand where we're going, and I understand the desire by some people to use a federally recognized tribal government agency as the one that would appoint the person, but on the same token, it takes me out of the picture. And at some point in time in my life, maybe I'll want to sit on the North Pacific Council. I can't think of when that would ever be, but I just have a problem in how this is being presented other than taking out a subsistence user.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt, do you have comments?
I do not any longer. Thank you.
Representative Heron.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the comment is that I would respectfully argue that the amendment doesn't say an Alaska Native individual nominated by an Alaska Native organization represents rural subsistence users. Is that there are literally thousands of Alaskans, regardless of their race, that may be nominated by an Alaska Native organization under the Federal Register, essentially, is a recognized tribe. So I understand the comment and appreciate it as well.
All right. Further discussion? Pardon? Yes. Okay, that was but we passed the amendment, so now we have.
No, we did not. There's
no, we did not.
There are no objections.
Okay. I just commented
with
on
an objection. So we will have to vote on Amendment 1. Kelly, if you can have a roll call. On Amendment A, dot 3.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Who objected?
I haven't objected yet. I just.
Well, I thought you did.
Someone had objected for a reason. Did you? Okay.
Well, my comment was I seconded it for the right. sake of discussion, but I've not voted on it one way or the
other. I don't think there was an objection. I'm trying to think. Okay. I was just trying to figure out if there was an objection, if there was a need to go through with the vote. So.
You got
to
ask.
Does anybody have? Let me start there.
Does anybody have an objection?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yes, now we have an objection.
Okay.
All right.
HCR Amendment A3, Representative Johnson is absent. Representative Herron.
Yes.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
Yes.
Representative Miller.
Yes.
Representative Osterman.
No.
Chair Thompson.
Yes.
4 yeas, 2 nays.
Okay, so by a vote of 4-2, we have adopted Amendment A.3. So we're now down to the amended HCR 13. And any further discussion on the amended version? Seeing none, we need somebody to entertain them. I'd like to entertain a motion to have HCR 1327LS0802/A.3.
No,
pardon?
A as amended.
As amended, with committee record. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move HCR 1327LS0802/A as amended with committee recommendations attached to office to vote.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, HCR 13 is moved from committee. This concludes the business for the evening, and please note there is no fishery committee meeting scheduled for Tuesday, January 31st. At this time, it is now 6:40, and that concludes our business for today, and we are adjourned. Do not leave.